The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Did You Know Show. I am your host, Alex Parnuk, and together we'll attempt to resolve some of the most complex problems on the planet, but in a very common sense sort of way. Something that seems to be sorely missing in this age of media information overload. In doing this show, one would ask, why have I committed myself to this task? The plain and simple answer is, I want to get information to you that seems to be missing and not provided in the old media. So join me in the show through your interaction by providing comments, suggestions, and if necessary, criticism when you don't agree. You can contact me at shout@theflypod.com. Good day, listeners, and welcome back to my continuing governmental series about the executive branch of government and its array of sub-agencies, corporations, commissions, and boards. Today's presentation revolves around the Environmental Protection Agency, which is an integral part of the executive branch of government. By this I mean that even though the Environmental Protection Agency is not a major department of the government, it still takes part and has a seat at all cabinet-level meetings with the president. As usual, I believe it is important to understand the why of this agency and especially why it came into existence within the framework of the executive branch. The mission of the Environmental Protection Agency from their own website is to protect human health and the environment. I ask rhetorically, what then is it that the Health and Human Services is supposed to do? What is it that the Bureau of Land Management within the Department of Interior is supposed to do? Ponder that as we delve into the Environmental Protection Agency. In doing these discussions on the various entities of the executive branch, I found that generally speaking, these entities were formed as a result of specific legislation that was passed by Congress. In the case of the Environmental Protection Agency, this is not exactly the case. The Environmental Protection Agency was initially proposed within the confines of the Reorganization Plan No. 3, proposed by then-President Richard M. Nixon in the form of a special message to Congress. This action and other legislation, which were the inspiration and justification for the Environmental Protection Agency. The Congress had passed much legislation with various requirements to monitor specific activities within its scope, such as the Energy Department or the Department of Interior. These departments have aspects of their governing legislation which require specific actions relating to protect the environment, both from the energy and land use standpoint. Also, at this time, NEPA, which is the National Environmental Policy Act, was passed by Congress in 1969. And had requirements which would be better suited to action by a unifying body. The administration of then-President Nixon created an agency, the Environmental Protection Agency, better known as the EPA, which was officially activated on December the 2nd, 1970, by executive memorandum and not by legislation. This action was due to the requirements within other legislation and the newly passed NEPA, which affected all federal agencies and their required reaction to pollution and hazards to the environment. This necessitated the crafting of a unifying body in the form of the EPA, thus consolidating the activities, regulations, and environmental requirements of the various executive departments under one roof. But I ask, was this constitutional? Now, for those not around in the 60s and 70s, it should be noted that during this period in America's history, the country was going through an era where the environment and ecology were paramount in the conversations of the day. Terms such as acid rain, pollution, DDT, and environmentally unfriendly materials were being discussed all around the country. Many areas of the United States were being affected adversely by pollution from contaminants from industry and the general population. Events such as acid rain caused by the emission of sulfur dioxide and nitrogen dioxide mixing with the water molecules resulting in rain that was highly acidic, making lakes in the northeastern United States change their pH levels, which had the effect on the ecology of the environment in that normally existing habitats could not be supported or maintained naturally. pesticides finding their way into the watersheds and the Great Lakes by the leaching of chemicals into the waters changed the biology of these bodies. Lake Erie, especially affected, at one time it was called the Dead Lake due to its being the shallowest Great Lake. Portions literally died. Its water became undrinkable in many areas, and wildlife was adversely affected. DDT, a common pesticide used vigorously by the farming industry, was affecting animals and humans. The American bald eagle and other birds of prey were especially affected due to its primary food source being fish and having their eggshells become thinner with less and less eggs being hatched and broods not making into adulthood. Recall the Love Canal near Buffalo, New York, where toxic waste had been buried and years later caused both a human and environmental crisis. Just a little bit of history here. The Love Canal, encompassing approximately 36 city blocks, was originally to be a model community supporting itself and industry via canal to generate electricity. However, that project was discontinued, and the area became a dumping site for city refuse. Then, in the 1940s, a chemical company started dumping chemical wastes in the canal. In all, over 21,000 tons of caustics, acids, and hydrocarbons were dumped at this site. In 1953, after filling in the canal, the chemical company sold the land to the city of Niagara Falls for $1. Homes built on that land and schools built by the city of Niagara Falls, even though the chemical company that had owned this land explained the dangers due to the dump materials. Eventually, the dangers were realized and this area was cleaned up, but not until much litigation was expended and personal hardships were experienced. And finally, let us not forget the effects of a book written by Rachel Carson titled Silent Spring, which brought to the attention of the populace the detrimental effects of pesticides when used indiscriminately. Today, Lake Erie is one of the finest fishing areas in the United States. The bald eagle's numbers are coming back, and we have the pleasure of watching our national symbol fly through our skies as a reminder of the greatness of this country when it puts its mind to making changes. And lastly, we need not forget the EPA Superfund program that was instrumental in the cleanup of numerous other hazardous waste sites, such as the Love Canal and old nuclear processing sites throughout the country. Remember, these are things of the past, and today we are much more of an environmentally friendly and aware nation. Now back to the EPA. This agency's 2014 budget was listed at over $8 billion, quite an increase from the $1 billion in 1970. Its workforce has also changed from just 4,000 employees in 1970 to well over 15,000 today. Organizationally, the agency is structured as many others. There is an administrator appointed by the president. Then there is a deputy administrator, and below these top echelon persons are 11 separate offices, such as the Office of Children's Health Protection, the Office of Civil Rights, the Office of Congressional and Intergovernmental Relations, the Office of Executive Services, Office of the Executive Secretariat, the Office of Homeland Security, Office of Public Affairs, Office of Public Engagement and Environmental Education, Office of Small Business Programs, and lastly, the Science Advisory Board. All these offices function and operate out of a main facility located in Washington, D.C., in an area called the Federal Triangle Campus, with additional space at three other areas still within the confines of the Washington, D.C. area. It is here in Washington, D.C. that most of the administrative decisions and actions take place. Next down the list of the organizational chart are 10 regional offices, which serve the rest of the United States. The 10 regional facilities are located in Boston, New York City, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, Kansas City, Denver, San Francisco, which takes care of Hawaii and the Pacific Islands, and lastly, Seattle. It is from these regional offices that EPA addresses local problems throughout the United States. Further, within the structure of the agency, there are an additional 31 labs, research centers, and science advisory boards located throughout the United States. Trying to give you a feel for what's going on, I immersed myself into the acronyms of the agency, and I'll just briefly give you a sense of what's out there. In Atka, Oklahoma, there is a lab called GWERD, G-W-E-R-D, which stands for Groundwater and Ecosystem Restoration Division. Then there was MED, M-E-D, the Mid-Continental Ecology Division in Gros Isle, Michigan, and Duluth, Minnesota. And while doing this research, I clicked on an EPA map located at its website. I noticed an awful lot of locations designated as CID. This acronym stands for Criminal Investigations Division. I looked at an EPA site with enforcement numbers and found that for 2014, there were 271 criminal cases opened, 187 defendants were charged, 155 years of incarceration given, and over $63 million in fines issued. That's not collected, just issued. And $63 million, if paid, doesn't go very far in helping to pay for an $8 billion agency. Now, in digging even a little deeper, and especially into the Office of Inspector General for the EPA, I found that the EPA is not immune from internal problems. The Office of Inspector General is the watchdog of the agency. And within that framework of activity, we have Congress's oversight function, which is imperative for the good and honest function of governmental agencies. When the Environmental Protection Agency denies access to data to its own Office of Inspector General, and specifically in this case within the Office of Homeland Security for the EPA, then fellow citizens and taxpayers, we have a problem. If the Office of Inspector General for the Environmental Protection Agency cannot do its job properly, then that means Congress is not able to provide the necessary oversight, and your congressman and senator were not able to do one of their primary functions, which is the oversight of the executive branch of government. If one ever wondered where the money is or isn't, it's in the minutiae of government waste, fraud, and abuse. From an OIG, Office of Inspector General report, dated November the 17th, 2014, an audit revealed numerous deficiencies and weaknesses within this agency called EPA. A partial listing I'll include. I quote, "Controls over accountable personnel inventory process needs improving. The property management and accounting systems do not reconcile. A fiscal 2013 collection was recorded to an incorrect fund. Accounts receivable were not properly reconciled. Restricted entry access to server rooms was not consistently enforced. Information technology assets need to be better monitored and secured, and those same information technology assets need to be better protected from threats." Additionally, in an OIG report regarding staffing, the following conclusion was stated, and I again quote from that report. EPA lacks reasonable assurance that program and regional offices are employing their staff resources effectively and efficiently. This from the agency's own Oversight Office of Inspector General. Let's take a little jump back in time. Do you recall ALAR? That was another name for diminazide, a plant growth regulator. In 1989 was the year of the Great Apple Scare. I quote from an article entitled ALAR 5 years Later by Kenneth Smith. This article was written specifically for the American Council on Science and Health. Let me just give you several points presented relating to ALAR. Now remember, this EPA classified ALAR as a possible cancer-causing chemical. The California Department of Food and Agriculture found that intolerable risk relied on inappropriate residue values and exposure models to reach invalid conclusions. A 1989 study by experts concluded that diminazide was not oncogenic in mice, causing tumors, which means. Experts met again recently and reviewed additional data and came away more convinced than ever that ALAR and UDMH were not risks they had been portrayed as. And in a 1989 study by the British government, it concluded that even for infants and children, consuming the maximum quantities of apples and apple juice subjected to the maximum treatment with diminazide, there is no risk from UDMH. Now, this is not to say that you can't go on the internet and read all kinds of stories agreeing with the dangers of ALAR, but I'll let you, the listener, do that. In conclusion, one needs to assess danger, risk, unintended consequences in determining the value and function of government agencies that are performing at less than optimal efficiency. According to their own inspector general, but alas, I, the teller, will let you, the listener, make that evaluation. I hope you've enjoyed this segment on the EPA as much as I have in researching it. If you have questions or concern, just drop me a line right at the flypod.com site when you listen to this podcast. Well, until next time in our next Did You Know show, keep your powder dry and your silver coins in your pocket.